I'm glad to see all of you here. Tonight, me and David are continuing our study on the book of Psalms, and tonight we're going to be covering chapters 3 and 4. So the chapter settings, Psalms chapter 3, the title tells us that it is a song of David and that it was written during the time he was fleeing from his son Absalom. And Psalms chapter 4 also says it's a song of David, and the wording is very similar to that of chapter 3, so we assume that it was written around the same time. Now tonight what I will be covering is the rebellion of Absalom. So we see the beginning of his rebellion in 2 Samuel 15, 2 through 6. And what he did is he went to the gate of the kingdom, and people who were coming to his father for advice, who were coming to have their problems resolved, what he did is he stopped them and he told them, "There's nobody in there that can help you. Let me help you with your problems. If I was in charge, if I was judge in Israel, I would help you." And this is how he slowly gained enough influence to where, as we see in 2 Samuel 15, 13, it says, "Now a messenger came to David saying, 'The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom.'" So we see that Absalom has now gained enough influence in Israel that has become worrisome. And it says right here, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom." Now, already this would be worrisome to David. Obviously, the people that he has worked with, worked for, given his life to since the story of David are rebelling against him. He has fought their enemies, he has worked for God and been a good king. But now he has to flee for his life with all but 10 concubines. He takes all of his house and leaves Israel. Now, with those, the priests brought the Ark of the Covenant. And what we see is, throughout the history of Israel, you kind of get this mentality that they think that wherever the ark is, that's where God's power will be. If they have the ark, then they're going to win. God's with them. But instead of that, David tells them to take the ark back to Israel. And he puts his faith in God instead of this ark that the priest brought with him. So they take the ark back to Israel. David put his faith in God. Now, as David and his men are traveling along, there comes a man named Shimei of the house of Saul. And he begins to assault David and his men, throwing rocks at them, kicking up dirt, verbally assaulting him. Now, at this point, if you were David, your son, who you brought into the world, has kicked you out of your kingdom. The people who you have worked for and given your life and devoted your life to have turned against you and are seeking your life. And all you have is the members of your house that you managed to escape with. And then this man from the house of Saul comes and starts kicking up dirt, calling you names and throwing rocks at you. Now David's men wanted to behead Shimei, but David, in 2 Samuel 16:11, shows his control and says, "And David said unto Abishai and all his servants, 'See how my son, who came from my own body, seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has ordered him.'" So we see that David is grieving over his son rebelling. "My son, who came from my own body, seeks my life." This had nothing to do with Absalom right here. But yet he brings that back to Absalom rebelling. This is weighing on David's mind. His son, who came from his own body, wants to kill him. I don't think any of us know what that's like. And yet he still had the restraint not to take out his anger on Shimei here. Now, if we go back to Israel, Absalom has arrived, and he begins to deface and just disgrace his father and tear down his name in any way that he can. And, you know, what he did is he took counsel. What should I do next? And one of his counselors tells him to take those 10 concubines, which I mentioned before, and take them on top of the palace inside of all of Israel. And he set up a tent and took those concubines for himself. Now, his son has kicked him out of Israel. He has turned his people against him. He has taken his wives for himself. This Benjamite has come and harassed him. But still, David has restraint. Now, even more than that, in 2 Samuel 17:11, it says, "Therefore I advise that all Israel be fully gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba, like the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person." So, we see the odds that are stacked against David here. He has been kicked out of his home by his son, who he brought into the world. This son has taken the loyalty of all but a few members of his household. He has taken the loyalty of the people that David has devoted and given his life to serving from the time of David, when David slew Goliath, onward to this point. And he has been harassed. I'm sure he is tired from traveling in the wilderness. And yet, we still see that David has peace. If we look here, we see a representation of David's day. The darker parts being the night and the brighter parts being the daytime. If we look at Psalms chapter 3, it appears to be a morning song. He has just woken up. It says, "I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustained me." Now, look at Psalms 4. This appears to be the counterpart to that. It is a song that after a long day, David is laying down to sleep. It says, "I will both lie down in peace and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." So we see throughout all the odds that are stacked against David, throughout everything, his son, who he brought into the world rebelling against him, kicking him out and seeking his life, his people turning against him, him being harassed, him hiding in the wilderness, he still has peace. He knows that the Lord will make things right. Now that concludes my portion of the study. I'm now going to hand it off to David.
While Carson was covering that last part, I was sitting here thinking about David's reflections here and the tone of these two songs. There are other psalms he wrote about the time of Absalom's struggle to overthrow him and all the anguish that David was going through. And those songs are filled with David talking about his pain and his agony and his concern. And this one is just brimming with these statements of faith. "I slept good last night. I'm at peace with God." And then at the other bookend of the day, "I'm going to sleep good tonight because I'm at peace with God." In another song that we'll cover at some point in the future, Lord willing, David talks about the same time during his life saying, "You know, I'm soaking my bed with tears." And I'm sitting here thinking, how do we get both of these perspectives? And it strikes me that in Psalms 3 and Psalms 4, David is emphasizing his choice of faith during all these trials. And in some of these other songs, he's talking about his emotional battle during these same times. Now, you think about your troubled times in life, the problems that you have, the times that you get down. You're probably going through some right now. There'll be some of you that have had worse times in the past than whatever trouble you're having right now. But we've all got something going on that troubles us. And there's a part of you that's clinging to your faith, that's trusting God, that you have no intentions of failing God or drifting away from the Lord and His church or anything like that. But then there's this other part of you that's emotionally struggling. It may not necessarily manifest itself in buckets of tears the way David seemed to struggle, but in some way you show that emotional struggle. And you feel conflicted and you wonder, you know, which person am I? Am I this person that can't stop feeling upset about this? Or am I this person that's chosen to have faith? Because faith is a choice. It is not a feeling. It's something you choose to have and do, or you fail to choose to have and do. And I think this song is showing us that both of these things are who we are if we're faithfully serving God. When we're in the midst of a storm in life, the part of us that has made the choice to continue to believe and trust God's promises and persevere, that's very real. And mounting grief, mounting anguish does not change that fact. From the perspective of David's faith, he was sleeping just fine because he knew he was right with God. Okay? From the perspective of David's emotions, he had a lot of struggles. Who wouldn't under these circumstances that Carson described for us so well this evening? Who wouldn't struggle under such circumstances? Okay? But he never gave up his choice of faith. Look at Psalms 3, the first four verses. Lord, how they have increased who trouble me. Many are they who rise up against me. Many are they who say of me, there is no help for him in God, Selah. But you, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory and the one who lifts up my head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me from his holy hill. David here speaks in great confidence of God hearing him as he cried out. Now, are we supposed to gather from that any time I'm facing a problem in life, I've got to assume that God's going to at some point fix that problem? Not at all. David could have this confidence because God had already promised him that his throne would be perpetual, that his offspring would lead for a long time, and it'd be a blessed kingdom, and he would have a successful reign and all like that. So when somebody rises up to try to stop that, David could know that problem was going to get solved because God had already promised him, you're going to have this long, fruitful reign, and you know, in your seed there's going to be this great and eventual eternal reign on the throne, foretelling the coming of Christ, which we studied in Psalms 2. So based on that promises, those promises, David could trust, God's going to fix this. And you may have problems that center around promises that God has made, that you can have that kind of confidence. Or you may have problems where God hadn't promised to take away all our troubles in life, has he? In fact, he's assured us there will be lots of trouble in life, and eventually death will claim us. He's assured us of that. And so we have to be careful what we assume he will fix, but one we can always know is that he hears our prayers and helps what he can help within the framework of what he's promised us he would do. This psalm speaks of the increase of David's adversaries. 2 Samuel 15 and 12, Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor from his city from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices, and the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number. And David talked about how they increased those who troubled him, and there are many who would rise up against him. And as that story that Carson told us unfolds, you just get the sense of this growing number of allies for Absalom and this growing number of adversaries for David. And then at that juncture in the story, it's really heavy against David, so much so that he has to leave. And then later on, what did we read about Absalom doing? He's gathering everybody from Dan to Beersheba to turn against David. You know, David, the guy that's been the best king they've ever had. You know, the guy that defeated the Philistine and stopped them from being Philistine slaves, that David. The David that even when he was in exile, when he had a chance, would go in and deliver Israeli cities from foreign oppression. That David who's done nothing but love them and fight for them his whole life, that guy, the whole nation turned against him. Okay? And he feels this mounting number of adversaries. In that reading in the first three verses of Psalms 3, he talked about how there were many that would say that the Lord is not with him. The Lord is not going to help David. That was the word that was going around Israel. God's not going to help David. And Shimei seems to have led the charge on that. 2 Samuel 16, 7 and 8. Shimei said thus when he cursed, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom your son. So now you are caught in your own evil because you are a bloodthirsty man. So with these words, Shimei is basically saying, God's not going to help you. In fact, he's done this to you. You're just getting what you deserve. And that's something that we'll talk about more in a future song. But for now, just focus on this idea that David, in Psalms 3, is singing about this guy and the terrible things that he's saying, and singing about the mounting adversaries. And what's the punchline? His confidence in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory, and the one who lifts up my head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me from his holy hill. David was utterly confident that God had heard him and that God was going to take care of this. How could he be that confident? Because God had promised him he would. Faith is not assuming God will do something just because you want it. Faith is knowing that God will do something because he promised he would do it. Faith is in trusting the promises of God, not trusting in the power of your wishes, and that the divine genie will dart about at your bidding. That is not faith. That's presumption. Faith is trusting in the promises of God. And that's what we find David doing. And his great confidence here is a show of that choice of faith that I was talking about. Psalms 3, verse 5 through 8. I lay down and slept. I woke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me all around. Arise, O Lord, save me, O God, for you have struck all my enemies on the cheekbone. You have broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing is upon your people. Here David talks about not having fear, even though thousands of people are rising up against him. Go back to that part in the story that Carson shared with you about the mounting adversaries and rounding up people from Dan to Beersheba to go hunt for David and do battle with him and bring him down. And that's what he's singing about here. And he speaks about the problem and his prayers as though God's already heard and answered his prayers. And he's in exile, but he's speaking of the problem as though it's past. That is faith. That God will keep his promise. There's a total trust here. I won't be afraid if 10,000 people come against me. Psalms 27 and verse 3, comparison here, says, though an army may encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war may rise against me, in this will I be confident. A total choice of total faith. Psalms 4, the first three verses, opens up. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You have relieved me in my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. How long, O ye sons of men, will you turn my glory to shame? How long will you love worthlessness and seek falsehood? Selah. But know that the Lord has set apart for himself him who is godly. The Lord will hear when I call upon him. Look at the language in this prayer that looks at both sides of the problem. While David's in it, hear me when I pray. While David's still in it, he prays as though he was after it. Saul looking back, the Lord will hear. The Lord has heard. These problems are solved. You see the strength of his faith here. Look at the inferences of the same circumstances that the chapter title stipulates for chapter 3. Talked about people turning his glory to shame. That's what happened when his son pitched a tent on the rooftop of David's palace and went up there with those concubines one by one and had them intimately in the sight of all Israel. Now that was intended to be a display of his ultimate power and authority and the fact that I have won. I have supplanted my father's throne. See, I have total control. What a disgrace to his dad. How ashamed must David have felt of his son's conduct and of his concubines up there. I wonder if it nagged him. Remembrances of what he had done with Uriah's wife and then having Uriah killed. Well, here where he's emphasizing in his song about his choice of faith, he's not going to sing about that grief. He's going to sing about his belief that God would hear him and answer him. God will hear, the Lord will hear when I call to him. Verse 3 of chapter 4. Psalms 34 and 15, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are open to their cry. We find similar statements in the New Testament. Prayer is a privilege that belongs to God's faithful children. Okay? Absalom could make sacrifices, and part of the story there that we looked at, it appears that that's what he did. So what? The sacrifices of the wicked are an abomination to the Lord, and the Bible says the same thing about the prayers of the wicked. But he listens attentively to the prayers of the righteous. Though David was in distress, though David was in exile, though he was in grief, though he was fleeing for his life, though he was bearing this great shame, he had the confidence of his relationship with God. That's always our starting point for peace of mind. Sometimes we center our peace of mind too much on the approval of others. And it's understandable we want others to like us and all that goes with that. I understand that. But our deepest peace of mind needs to start with the faith and confidence of God's approval, with our relationship with God. Our mental well-being, our peace of heart, begins and ends with our relationship with God. You get that right and you keep that well nurtured and you will reach the reachable. You will sustain acceptable relations with others who can be reached. And those that can't be reached, no amount of peace in your heart's going to fix that. There was no amount of right conduct on David's part that was going to secure Absalom's repentance. Absalom was making his choices, and David couldn't fix that. But he could sustain his relationship with God, knowing that that would maintain peace with others who were reachable, whereas Absalom was unreachable. Let's keep looking. Psalms 4, verse 4 through 8. Be angry and do not sin. Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still, Selah. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. There are many who say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. You have put gladness in my heart more than in the season that their grain and wine increased. I will both lie down in peace and sleep, for you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. David was very confident, wasn't he, that God was going to secure his safety during this time of rebellion. Observe how that opens up. Be angry and do not sin. The King James, I think, translates that stand in awe and do not sin. Ephesians 4:26 appears to be an instance where Paul is quoting this psalm, but in his quotation of it, he renders it, be angry and do not sin. Of course, written in the Greek equivalent of that language, do not let the sun go down on your wrath. So, should the text say, be angry and don't sin, or stand in awe and don't sin? Well, the Jews produced the Septuagint translation sometime before Christ, and the Septuagint translation, they translated this from Hebrew to Greek, and they use the same kind of Greek words you find in Ephesians 4, indicating that they understood it to be angry but don't sin. Well, why would they translate it stand in awe in the King James translation? Well, the Hebrew words that's used here are flexible enough in their meaning that they can mean stand in awe or have this sense of fear or awe or surprise or get mad. So it's words that are very broad in their meaning, and it appears that the proper translation or the proper way to look at this is to have the awe of anger but don't sin. Now, what on earth does that have to do with David fleeing from Absalom? Well, it's obvious he could get mad at Absalom. But is there a point in all that story where you see David exercising tremendous, admirable self-control? Go read the story where Shimei cursed him and you'll see it. All his buddies had their hand on the scabbard of their sword ready to draw and cut his head off. And David said no. He stayed his wrath. That doesn't mean that the stuff didn't make David mad. This is David lecturing himself. Okay, so you're mad at the guy. Don't let yourself do something sinful. What am I going to do about it? Well, meditate on my bed. When I lay down at night, I need to meditate and think about the proper response to this. And that's a big part of our control of our anger. I've illustrated this before, and it works well in my mind. I hope it makes sense to you. I think of our lives as a ship, and we're on the deck holding the wheel of the ship, steering that, and that's our mind, that's our faith. That's our choice to serve God. And our emotions are over here on the side. And sometimes they come in and they try to wrestle away control of the wheel and have us make emotion-based decisions. And that's something David was facing when Shimei was chunking rocks and cursing him and saying everything that was wrong and horrible about him. You deserve what you're getting. In the face of all those horrible things, David's emotions are over here trying to wrestle away control of the ship. So David would make an emotion-based decision and say, no, put your sword up. I'll go cut his head off. But he didn't. He thought about it. And that's what we don't do when we let anger get a hold of us. We quit thinking and we start emoting. And that's a recipe for a train wreck nearly every time. All this nonsense people say about follow your heart. Don't think it through too much. Follow your heart. That is ungodly counsel. And passages like this teach us to set our heart aside. Our emotions have their place in our life, but the place is not at the helm of the ship, okay? The helm of the ship is to be manned by a mind that has a choice of faith that we find with David here in Psalms chapter 4. Instead of just flying off the handle and reacting with emotions, we need to think about it and be still. Can I make myself stop having those feelings? David didn't indicate that he could, and when Paul quoted it, he didn't indicate that. He said, be angry. Have those emotions. Just don't let them control you. And don't let them linger. Well, how am I going to not let them linger? By meditating and being still. And let those emotions die down. When we think about the right things in the right way and we still ourselves from seeking revenge or lashing out, that gives our emotions a chance to die down. And then we can think better and do better. This peace of mind that we talked about, that Carson described as a bookends of David's day. In Psalms 3 and 5, I laid down and slept. That's in the morning. He's saying, I slept good last night. He had peace of mind. The Lord sustained me. In Psalms 4 and 8, he anticipates at the other end of his day, he anticipates good sleep. I will both lie down in peace and sleep. For you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. In both instances, David speaks of his peace of mind being rooted in God. When it feels like every other relationship in your life is broken, and it's never really that bad, but sometimes it feels that bad, when important relationships are in peril, when it feels that way, remember your peace of mind begins and ends with peace with God. For David, it was the sustaining of a kingdom. We aren't kings over a kingdom in the sense that David was, and we have no promises to make us kings over a king in the sense that David was. But what we do have is a promise of salvation. And you and I routinely face problems in life that threaten that. And if I let my emotions get a hold of me and take control of the helm of the ship, I'll make bad decisions and put that salvation in peril. Stop. Think. Be still. Make the choice to trust in God. And then settle your peace of mind in deep in that peace with God. So when that strife is going on and that enemy is out there, whether that's enemy, a person or a place or a thing, whatever that enemy is, you've got peace with God, and that's the peace that matters. That's peace that lasts forever. That'll shrink those other problems. Not going to make them go away. These prayers didn't immediately make David's problems go away. But in the midst of those prayers, he had the peace of mind of his peace with God. And I think that's a very encouraging lesson for us all as we face life's perils. Bringing this study to a close now, I want to remind you of the importance of you having peace with God. And if you're outside of Christ, you have none. And you need Jesus. Why not obey the gospel today? It doesn't matter how well you're getting along with everybody else or how rosy other things look in life. If you don't have peace with God, you don't have peace that'll last for eternity. So make that choice today. Or if you're a Christian, you need the church to pray for you, to assist you in your life spiritually. We would be glad to help you in that way. If we can in either way, please come. Have a seat on the front while we stand and while we sing.